All right, stop it. Sorry, they're giving me a hard time. Wednesday night, if you can join us, we are reading the three pages that I think have really affected me powerfully, spiritually, and really have given me a lot of change in the way I see things. And we agnostics, so if you can join us at 7:30 on Wednesday night, we're at three different parts of the book. So we are in We Agnostics, and we get done with that. We'll do How It Works preamble and then go right through. On Saturdays, we are finishing step five, and we reviewed the inventory process with the Carry This Message, and we didn't finish the handout. It was really good yesterday, and we have two more pages, and then we're going to start on 6 and 7 and then go through there on Saturdays. So we have three meetings, and we go through the book. Tonight, we finished the book, and for the first time, I'm doing the Acceptance is the Answer story by Dr. Paul, and we're going to finish that tonight, and then we'll start over with the big book, I think the 10th or 11th time. I can't keep it straight. We started in 08, so what year is this, 19? And so this Acceptance is the Answer, it made a lot of sense to me when I read it the first time years and years and years ago. I really studied it today and prepared for this. You guys might not believe it, but I do try to prepare and make sure that it's worth your time. And we're at the point where we're on page 416. And I just want to make a comment about the stories in the book. The original big book, they had the first 164 pages and then Dr. Bob's Nightmare. They wanted to sell the book, and they wanted it to be big enough that people would really want this. And it was only 164 pages. And they made the print big, and they made the pages big and thick. And that's why it was called a big book. And it was red, so that you couldn't miss it on the shelves. And so the Salvation Army had a testimony book, and they had all these testimonials. And so Bill and Bob and the others got this idea, we're going to put testimonials in the big book. And that's how they got the idea for the first, I think there were 13 stories. And those stories were actually, they had writers who interviewed the people and then wrote the story so that it would be pretty good. And that's how that got started. The stories were designed as testimonies so people reading the book could say, you know, look, this worked for them, it'll work for me. The stories are not the program. I don't know how many stories there are now. How many, Jimmy, 40 or so?
42.
Yeah, 42, and they're all work walks of life, and they're trying to be there to help somebody new read this and say, you know, it worked for them, it can work for me, but it's not the program. This Acceptance was the Answer. They changed the name because everybody used to quote page 449, which is Acceptance is the Answer. And I saw somebody the other day and they said, yeah, Acceptance is the Answer. And I've heard that at meetings. Well, it's really not the answer. And we're going to look at that tonight. Dr. Paul wrote this story. He was really, he started treatment centers in Palm Springs for years. He wrote this in, what, 76 or something, Jimmy? And so he helped a lot of people. He's passed away. On the last line in page 416 on the second paragraph, he said, I feel I've used up my right to chemical peace of mind. Anybody agree with that? Now, alcohol, believe it or not, is a chemical. It's, God, I used to know the formula. Well, I'm getting old. But it's a two carbon fragments. And just like any other chemical. And so does anybody agree that they've used up their right to chemical peace of mind? What kind of peace of mind do we want? God's peace of mind, right? And it says we will know peace in this promises, right? Mm-hmm. Now, it said it helped him a great deal to become convinced that alcohol was a disease, not a moral issue. Dr. Bob, one of the reasons he had problems staying sober, he thought he was a weak-willed sinner And it was his fault that he couldn't stay sober. But when he understood that he had the obsession of the mind and no power in his own, then he could change the way he looked at himself and the disease. Now, a disease, what is our disease? We're at dis-ease with what? The spirit. Our disease is not that, our liver's too big or this and that. Now, we have something wrong with our body so that when we drink, we want a second one. Nobody's figured that one out. So I suggest you not start to drink if you're an alcoholic. Anybody agree with that? But we're at dis-ease with God, and how does that relate to drinking? Because when I'm at dis-ease with God, then I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. And then my mind says, get a drink or get a pill. Anybody else have that? Our mind's been damaged because we were trained from when we first started drinking or using that this would change the way I felt. And I'm never going to be at ease if I'm at dis-ease with God. So my disease was my spiritual malady. That's what they call the spiritual malady. New people, I ask them all the time what their problem is. And most people, the reason I think they don't make it, they don't know what their problem is. They don't understand what it means to be an alcoholic and then what it means to be powerless over alcohol. So he said, drinking is a result of a compulsion. A compulsion is an irresistible urge to behave or act, especially against one's conscious wishes. Now, that's not really true for us, for alcoholics. We don't drink for a compulsion because we can't bring it to consciousness. You see, we can't bring it to consciousness that this is bad right before we do it, right? We can only think about what it's going to do for me, not to me. But I think compulsion works for me. It works for you. The other thing about when you read these stories, this is not gospel. This is not these stories are people's stories. They're not good or bad or right or wrong. It's just their story. And there's a really good information. And we'll see, there's some powerful stuff in here and see how you what you think he's saying. Sobriety is not a matter of willpower. Anybody agree with that? It can't be, because we're the most strong-willed people in the world. The people of AA had something that looked much better than what I had, but I was afraid to let go of what I had in order to try something new. Does that sound familiar? There was a certain sense of security in the failure. Oh, familiar. See, we have old ideas, right? And we don't want to let go of them. And he says the alcoholic cannot differentiate the true from the false, right? We can't even see what's happening to ourselves. So he says, at last, acceptance proved to be the key to my drinking problem. Not the answer, but the key. After I'd been around AA for 7 months, tapering off alcohol and pills, not finding the program working very well. Any other people in here? Well, you know why he wasn't working it. And he really doesn't talk in his story about the steps at all. That's not good or bad, but he has this. He's presenting a certain powerful information, but he wasn't working. And I was finally able to say, okay, he was okay to say, you see how it is? He was a doctor, so you can understand. Okay, God, it is true that I, of all people, strange as it may seem, and even though I didn't give my permission, really, really am an alcoholic of sorts. Wasn't that nice of him? And it's all right with me. But you know, that's a big thing. That's a big step. So here's the thing, he accepted that, then here's the question, now what am I going to do about it? Now before he could accept that he was an alcoholic, he couldn't do anything about it, right? Because he was still fighting the idea. So he says, now what am I going to do about it? And when people are new, you might say, well, now what are you going to do about this? Because in the big book, it says, if you want what we have and want to see how we recovered from this hopeless condition of mind and body on page 20, you might want to ask us, what do I have to do, right? Question mark. And guess what they say? We wrote this book to show you what we did. When I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. Anybody like that? Mm-hmm. Anybody think it's true? Mm-hmm. Of course it is. If you're living in the problem, you have no solution. How was it living in the problem? Was it very good?
Not good.
So that we hope that living in the problem makes you miserable enough to want to try to live in the answer. And the problem goes away. Doesn't he say, doesn't the big book say on page 85, the problem's just been removed? Mm-hmm. We're in a position of neutrality towards alcohol, remember? From that moment on, I've not had a single compulsion to drink. And I think that's been true for a lot of people. You have that moment of complete defeat, complete attempting to let go of any control of your situation at all, and God's there, you ask him for help, and then a lot of times the compulsion's gone. Now he says, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. So does that mean that we just accept everything and then just say, okay, I've accepted it, and the problem goes away? No. See, a lot of people quote this, and when I heard him talk, you can listen to him on XA Speakers, he said, he left out, he should have written it, accepting things as they are. Because people quote acceptance as the answer, because he's going to say that in the next thing. So he's saying, when I'm disturbed, I have to accept that I'm disturbed. Now, what are we told in the spiritual axiom whenever we're disturbed? There's something wrong with me. It's our fault. So I have to accept that I'm disturbed, and there's something wrong with me. And what's wrong with me? I'm disturbed. I haven't accepted it as it is. Because I can't change what it is. If I have a flat tire, I have a flat tire. Right? Somebody pulled out in front of me yesterday. I was on the way to the meeting, and they immediately pulled right out in front of me and went 20 miles an hour. And I left a little late, so I had to say the prayer and do the four prayers. I got tired after two. I just said, it's only a 10 seconds difference, right? But it happens, right? I'm disturbed. It's because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in my life unacceptable to me. So when I'm disturbed, I have to accept the situation. Then what do I do about it? Because I don't want to live in the problem being disturbed, right? I want to live in the answer. How do I react to it? So it makes a lot of sense when you look at it that way. I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Well, it must be, because it is. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Now, a lot of people theologically want to argue with this or not. We don't care. It's in the book. It makes sense to me. Because it just happened, right? And remember, on page 68, it says, and this line is what came to mind when my son died. Now, that's a pretty bad thing, right? And so, but I couldn't change it, could I? No. So it says, just to the extent as I do as I think he would have me and humbly rely on him, can I enable to match calamity with serenity? So it doesn't matter what happens out there, we have God. And he will change how we see it and how we react to it. I may not have started this meeting if Curtis hadn't died. You know, that was what God said, you know, do this meeting, teach the big book. So he died in his car at 3 a.m, so somebody will do these steps and they won't have to die. And so it says, until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. That's true, isn't it? Unless I accept life completely in life terms, I cannot be happy. Now, I don't know about the word happy, but I cannot be at peace or serenity. Serenity to me is different than happy. Happy implies that I like the result, that there's good or bad. But I think happy here, he means peace. Am I okay? To me, the greatest gift I've gotten out of AA is that I feel okay most of the time, which for an alcoholic like me, I was always in fear, always in anger. Now I can just be okay most of the time. I need to concentrate. Now, this is a good one. Not so much on what needs to be changed in the world. Anybody want to do that? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we tried to do, right? Yeah. Now, it didn't work playing God, did it? Mm-hmm. Why? Because I can't change the world. Son of a, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And what needs to be changed in me and my, I have to change my attitude. Now, here's what I think's missing in this. I think everything he says is true, but it has to come from God. I have to go to God. Have God change my attitude. God change the way I react. And I couldn't do that till I worked the steps. So I can be disturbed, and then I have to go say, God, I'm disturbed, help me. Now, I couldn't even see that before I worked the steps. I just was disturbed, and they were wrong. Anybody else like that? Yeah. So what the steps have given me is a consciousness that I need to go to God, and He'll change the way I see it. Because I couldn't change myself, right? Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I was self-will run riot, and I wanted to be rid of it, but I didn't have the power. That's what it means by the consciousness of God, the presence of God. And this is pause and ask, right, John? Pause and ask for the right thought or action. Now, Shakespeare said, I like this, all the world's a stage and all the men merely players. He forgot to mention, now I wrote in this paragraph, there are five key things that he says. He forgot to mention that I was the chief critic. Anybody else like that? Anybody still like that a little bit today? Of course. Anybody today judging me at the meeting? Well, have a party. Get over it. Get over it. I'll shut up. Don't worry. I was the chief critic. I was always, so I was the chief critic, and I was always able to see. I saw the flaw. Nobody else did it. I saw the flaw in every person, every situation. I pointed it out. You see how he writes this? I am the critic. I see the flaws. I point it out. And because I knew you wanted perfection, so I'm going to tell you. Just as I did. AA and acceptance have taught me that nobody wants to be pointed out, right? In fact, we hate it when people point out things to us. We stew about it. At least I do. Not as much anymore. AA and acceptance have taught me that there's a bit of good in the worst of us and a bit of bad in the best of us. That we are all children of God and we each have a right to be here. Now that's the deal, isn't it? We talk about love and tolerance as our code, right? Somebody bothers you. Well, hello, they're a child of God just like you. And guess what? You could be bothering them. And so get over it. Practice consideration. That's my biggest character defect, is I'm inconsiderate that people just are who they are, right? And you never get over that, but you don't have to stay inconsiderate. You say, God, I don't want to be disturbed. So I have to accept that whatever it is there and be considerate and love and tolerant. Now, and it says, when I complain about me or you, I am complaining about God's handiwork. I am saying that I know better than God. So here it is in this paragraph. I'm the chief critic. I can see the flaw. I pointed it out. I knew you wanted perfection. I complain about somebody. I'm saying that I know better. Now, all I would say to somebody is, how'd that work for you? You see? And I did that without even realizing it. Anybody else do it? That's how we lived. And then we wondered why we're in conflict with everybody and everyone. And people are pissed off at us. Good job, Michael. And so for years, and then I wrote, why is this happening to me? And how do I react to it for any situation? And then I need to focus on how I react with God or without. See, when I react without God, I have a certain actions, and when I react with God, I have different actions. And at night, aren't we supposed to inventory? How did our day go? Where were we selfish? Decided? How did we react when we weren't with God? How do we react when we were with God? Were we kind of loving for all? Oh. And I wrote, I need to have focus on how I react and fit spiritual condition. For years, I was sure the worst thing that could happen to a nice guy like me would be that I would turn out to be an alcoholic. Is that true for anybody? Here's what I wrote. I wished I found this program when I was 15. And then I crossed it out. I wrote 10. And then I wrote 5. Seriously, think about it. All the decisions I made based on self that I look back on, I say, gee, why did I do that? I wouldn't have, if I was God-centered, I may not have done those things. Today, I find it's the best thing that ever happened to me. That's true for me, because I wouldn't have had this program in my relationship with God today. This proves I don't know what's good for me, and if I don't know what's good for me, and I love this, that I don't know what's good or bad for you or anyone. Anybody believe that? I have to remind myself all the time. Anybody here know what's good or for somebody else today? But you see, we do it automatically, right? And now we can stop ourselves. We don't have to live that way anymore. So I want people to talk about how they've changed. So I'm better off if I don't give advice. I wish I remembered that too. Anybody give advice today?
Yeah.
Here's the one thing I learned. Don't give advice if they don't want it. Because guess what? You just piss them off. I don't figure I know what's best and just accept life on life's terms as it is today, especially in my own life as it actually is. But here's the deal. I still have to do the serenity prayer. I have to ask God the serenity so I know what to change and what to accept after I've accepted it, so I need serenity. See, to me, acceptance is the answer. To get serenity with God is the answer to all my problems. God, give me serenity. I said the serenity prayer for a long time and forgot the God part. What do I need to, you heard at meetings, what do I need to change and what do I need to accept? Well, hello, I always made the wrong decisions. I need God to give me the serenity, the peace of mind to be able to see the truth. And that's what he's saying here. He's really talking about the serenity prayer. And then we accept what we can't change, we change what we can. If we accept our alcoholism, we know we need to change, right? And so we're not going to change until we know we need to. And I love this. Before AA, I judged myself with my intentions, which were always good, by the way. While the world was judging me by my actions. Now, did anybody ever have anything happen to them and they said, you know, I was just trying to do this, and don't they understand? And, oh my God, they're on my case again. It's so unfair. Anybody do that? That's the alcoholic theme song. It's true. We do it. And remember, it says we set the ball rolling. And we don't even see it. And he wrote, acceptance has been the answer to my marital problems. You ain't kidding. It's as though AA, it's true. I mean, AA has given me a new pair of glasses. Max and I have been married now for 35 years. Prior to our marriage, she was a shy, scrawny adolescent. I was able to see things in her that others couldn't necessarily see. Things like beauty, charm, gaiety, a gift for being easy to talk to, a sense of humor, and many other fine qualities. It was as if I had, rather than a minus touch, which turned everything to gold, a magnifying mind. Any magnifying minds in here? That magnified whatever it focused on. Joe, Charlie, talk about that resentment machine that we've got, that NFL replay machine. Mm-hmm. And we replay it, and we keep replaying it, and it gets worse and worse. They get worse, and we get better. And then her qualities grew, and as her qualities, we were happier and happier. Isn't that true? Now, here's something. I think he means it a little different than what he actually wrote. But then as I drank more and more, the alcohol seemed to affect my vision. I don't think it's the alcohol per se. I think it's his self-centeredness. It was when he was on alcohol, I'm sure he was worse. But even sober, I think he was very critical of her. Anybody have that in their own life? Instead of continuing to see what was good about my wife, one, I began to see her defects. Here it is again. I began to see. And the more I focused my mind on her defects, the more they grew. And every defect I pointed out to her. See, I've caused the whole resentment. You see how it is? Became greater. Each time I told her she was nothing, she receded a little more to nowhere. And the more I drank, the more she wilted. I think it's a very powerful example of how our self-centeredness, this paragraph and the one on the other page, how the way we see things, what we do when we're in the center of our universe, how we really harm people. Then one day in AA, I was told I had the lenses in my glasses backwards. The courage to change in the serenity prayer not meant that I should change my marriage, but rather I should change myself and learn to accept my spouse as she was and is. Now, I had a saying that started with Ryan and Brian 4 or 5 years ago. We all have that significant other. So I'd say, Ryan, how you doing? He'd go, Cindy's just Cindy. You say, how am I going? Patty's just Patty. You see, it's just they are who they are. We don't focus on what they did or didn't do or what I'm doing and they didn't do. It is the way it is. And it's a lot simpler and your life's a lot better. And so, but rather I should change myself and learn to accept my spouse as she was. Remember, consideration, love and tolerance is the key. And when you're living with someone, you have to pause. And you have to ask God. Don't react on your self-centeredness. ask God to see it through love and tolerance. And you'd be surprised. And here's the best advice I've found in myself. Keep my damn mouth shut. Just keep your mouth shut. Anybody else think that's good?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes I'm just ready. You know, you're just ready to say. And I have to say, keep your mouth shut, Michael. And I don't always do it, but I'm getting really good. And you know what? Things are getting better. I mean, it's great. We have a good relationship. But, you know, if you're living with someone, hello, you're going to need to do this. And as I focus on my wife's good qualities, I watch them grow and grow and grow. Now, one thing that always amuses me is at meetings, people will talk about their significant other, their ex, and what a terrible monster they were. And, as, you know, you hear it all the time. They go on and on. But at one time, they must have really liked that person. So how did they go from that to where they are today? And you see, when they're new, they don't see that they caused almost all of that. And so that's why when you do your four step, you see it differently. And you see how you owe these people amends. And you change the way you see them. That's why the four step we talked about yesterday, you have to do it. It's the process of forgiving. Now, here's the same with an AA meeting. The more I focus my mind on its defects, late start, long drunk, a log, cigarette smoke, the worse the meeting becomes. I got a text before this meeting was over, Sunday, about a month ago or so. Some guy came. I hadn't seen him before since. He sat over there, and after about 20 minutes, he got up and walked out, and he had the book there. So I thought, well, maybe he went to the bathroom and this and that. He sent me a text, and he said, I came here for a step meeting. I got some, excuse me, half-assed history lesson or something, and he was pretty upset. So I said, I'm glad I didn't read it till after the meeting. And then he gave me his number, and I said, if you want to talk or something. But, you know, it is the way it is. The more I focus my mind on its defects, then the next day he did apologize. He sent me an email and said he was sorry. But, you know, I heard something, I forgot to say last week. Somebody said, we don't have to worry about pleasing alcoholics because they spent their whole life pleasing themselves. Yeah. Now think about it. Like, we want to change the meeting because somebody doesn't like it or somebody doesn't like something. And you know, we have to watch ourselves because we're all people pleasers. But when I try to see what I can add to the meeting, anybody pissed off about the meeting, don't tell me if you are. I focus my mind on what's good. Now here's what I wrote. The more I focus my mind on the defects, that means I'm separated from God, right? And when I try to see what I can add to the meeting, connected to God. When I focus my mind on what's good about it, connected, rather than what's wrong with it, when I'm separated, the meeting keeps getting better and better. It's like with my wife. When I'm connected to God, she's better. When I'm not, she's worse. It's true of everybody. So how you react, if you're not reacting out of love and tolerance, you're not connected to God. When I focus my mind on what's good today, connected to God, I have a good day. And when I focus when I'm bad, separated, I have a bad day. Who's the only person that can make your day bad?
Me.
We just read that. If I focus on a problem, me, the problem increases. If I focus on the answer, God, the answer increases. So I thought that was really good. I got a lot more out of this going through it than I ever had. Now he talks about him and Max talks about their feelings. And they don't argue about their feelings. They accept their feelings. And here's what I had to learn. I have to allow people to feel. Like, I didn't want somebody to be disappointed, right? I can't control if they're disappointed. I don't want them to be upset. I can't control that. All I control is how I react to try to be compassionate with. And I wrote, when we deal in feelings, we tend to come to know ourselves and each other much better. And I wrote, step 10 is where I look at my feelings all day long and my motives. And in step 11, prayer and meditation, my feelings are from being connected, right? So that's where I got. He talked about the next paragraph about, they talk about the newcomers, the most important, but he said it should be the family first. And then he talks about with Max, he had to redo each of the 12 steps with Max in mind, saying, I'm powerless over alcohol. My home life is unmanageable by me. I had to say that every time I walked in the office. Anybody else? every time, every place you are, management will never work for me. And it says, when I try to think of her as a sick AA, Al-Anon, I treat her with the love I would give a sick AA newcomer. When I do this, we get along fine. But basically, in this paragraph, he's saying page 66, 67, which I've gone over 18 million times, right, is when we're angry, how do we get free of anger? We ask for love, patience, and tolerance, right? How can I be helpful? God save me from being angry at whoever and give me a kind and tolerant view of everyone. I've done 3 or 4 podcasts on those pages. Step 4, freedom from anger, page 66, 67. Perhaps the best thing, now this is really good for me, is to remember that my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. I never realized that. The higher my expectations of Max and other people are, the lower is my serenity. Why? They're my expectations. And so I wrote at the bottom, my serenity is related to when I'm fulfilling God's expectations. And that's how I get better positive self-esteem. If I have an expectation something happened, it's a resentment, right? And we talk about that all today. I can watch my serenity level rise when I discard my expectation. Isn't that why this guy suggested you write what I want doesn't matter all over the place? Because as soon as something matters to you, then you're going to get a resentment if it doesn't happen, or you're going to get afraid it won't happen. Then my rights try to move in. Anybody have rights? I have to discard my rights as well as my expectation. And here's a good thing. How important is it really? There's that expression, the short form of the Serenity Prayer is F it. Think about it. It just is. It just is what it is. How about compared to my emotional sobriety, which is really the key? And if I place more value on my serenity and sobriety than anything else, I can maintain it. So why get disturbed over something? Why get emotionally bothered by something at all? Should we really ever be disturbed at all? No. But we do. Why? Because we have self-centered glasses, and then we take them off, right? And we put the God-centered glasses on. That's what that new pair of glasses is. Acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. Well, this is good. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for him to tell me what to do. So you don't say, I accept this, and you just sit there. Now, here's what I wrote here. I wrote, make sure it's the prayer on page 87. Because it says, a period of meditation prayer that may be shown all through the day, my next step is to be by God, and that I be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. So I want, when I accept something, I have to ask God, what is the next right thing? What is the next step? I have to be sure to go to God. I hear a lot of people say, well, I just do the next right thing. Well, he was doing the next right thing when he was pissing everybody off, right? I have to be careful. It can't be my plan. It has to be God's. So I have to be very careful. So you ask God, what do I do now? And it says in the prayer we're supposed to ask God if we're going to face indecision, what our next right thought or action is to be, right? And so you don't have to even do everything. You just ask God, what do I do next? Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to him. However it turns out, that's God's will for me. And remember, it says we're to play the role God assigned, right? So some people say, well, what do I do? I said, well, you're at work. What's your job? Do the best job you can. Are you a dad? Be the best dad. Are you a husband? Be the best father. Are you an AA? Be the best AA member. Do you love God's children? Be the best person to God's children. It's not that complicated. And here's the thing. I must keep my magic magnifying mind. Any other magic magnifying minds in here? I know some. On my acceptance and off my expectations. Yeah, I know. Jimmy's looking at me. I know. I'm going to get a text later. And my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. It's so simple, isn't it? Isn't this great stuff? When I remember this, I could see I've never had it so good, right? Thank God for AA. So I went a little long, but we can go a few minutes after. There's so much powerful information in this chapter. I'm glad I went over it. Thank you, guys.